hey, I'm here at the end of the trail, and this is after I've already recorded that episode, but I wanted to come jump forward and say, hey, if I miss something on this video that you think is very important for a new UTV owner to know, buy, own, whatever, drop a comment, let me know. I'm curious to see what other people think. I've covered what I think a new UTV owner should know, but maybe you have experience trying it out. Tell me what made a difference for you. Anyways, let's jump into the beginning of the trail and you'll see what I think. All right, everybody, welcome back. We are doing another episode of Trail Talk. We are out here this morning just with me and the dogs. I'm actually going to let them out so they can start running around. Today we're talking about like five things you should know before you buy a UTV. Come on, dogs, get out. Out. Five things you should know before you buy a UTV. So I've been thinking about this for a little bit. I kind of wanted to put it together just because, you know, a lot of people just jump into these UTVs. They just buy them and they just go for it. And that's great. I like it. I like people getting out, getting the reps in outside, getting anybody getting out in the outdoors is doing good by me. But there's some things you should know about them before you buy them, before you jump in, before you start hitting trails. As is tradition, we are doing this on trail. So if you're just listening to this, I apologize. You might want to go jump out, check the YouTube video. We're running Resurrection today. This is a pretty easy trail. It's a five. And as always, Cardo's, you know, keeping my brain sane, blocking out some of that UTV noise, which, you know, we'll get into. All right, let's just jump into it. So speaking of UTV noise, the one thing, well, let me step back and say, if you see me checking my phone, it's because I'm checking my phone. I'm trying to make sure I keep track of this conversation instead of just letting it ride like I usually do. Anyways, keeping my head sane, one thing that you should know before you buy a UTV, especially if you buy one of these big performance sport machines, they are really capable. But the way I like to describe them is that they're basically a juiced up Fisher-Price toy. And what I mean by that is that they are, they're not a lot of frills. I mean, they're getting more frills. They're getting some heated seats and stuff like that. But not even just that. The thing that you should be aware of is that they are a lot of plastic. They are basically a two-frame buggy. There's not like, if you're expecting like the fit and finish of a BMW or a Mercedes, that's not going to be your thing. If you've ever been in a full-size like race car, off-road rig, something like that, you'll know that a lot of it is just, you know, whatever's functional. And the UTVs are kind of the same. Obviously, I'm speaking more towards the sport side of things, which is, you know, where I have most of my knowledge. So that would be your Turbo R's, your X3s, to a lesser extent, the KRX. They're not exactly a sport machine, but all of those kind of vehicles, you got to think, okay, I'm getting into a plastic wrapped tube frame buggy that's going to be very capable, but it's going to develop creaks. It's going to develop cracks. It's going to develop squeaks and noises and things like that because they are just a plastic, you know, plastic wrap tube frame buggy. That's what they are. Other thing I wanted to talk about is they are, that all being said, they are pretty decently fast. And this is all things that are falling under the Fisher-Price cars category. They're pretty decently fast for what they are. They're actually pretty fast. They're really fast. But they're not necessarily made for, like, the longevity. A good off-road vehicle, I think we can all compare to, is like a Jeep. I think you would be really, really stoked to buy a Jeep with under 50,000 miles on it. That said, if you had... Or I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. I think you would be pretty stoked to buy a Jeep that had 50,000 miles on it. You'd consider that like, oh, that's a pretty good deal, you know? But if you found a Razor or a Can-Am or something like that, that had 50,000 miles on it, you would be probably not buying it. Just to be honest, I wouldn't buy it. So that's something to keep in mind. The longevity is not there compared to other, you know, full-size vehicles that have to double as like a, you know, work vehicle, a daily driver. Another thing that goes under that same category of the Fisher-Price cars, the EPS, the electronic power steering. I know other vehicles have this sort of issue too. I know personally some people with Broncos that have some, you know, issues with it. But the EPS can leave a lot to be desired when you're trying to turn, especially if you're up in these tight rocks. If you're out on the regular old trail, you know, just mobbing dirt, you won't really have an issue with it. They turn really well. They turn fine there. But when you get bound in the rocks, EPS tends to be a little bit of a fight just to try and get those wheels turned. It doesn't have the power of like a full gearbox, I feel like. And it also doesn't really have the power of a, obviously not of a hydro assist setup or something like that. Okay, so that covers that. They are basically Fisher-Price cars. But there's some real benefits to that type of thing. One of the huge benefits is that they are light and a lot of their weight is down low. So you don't end up with like the top heaviness. They're a really good LCOG vehicle or low center of gravity vehicle. They, like I say, this weighs 2,500 pounds. The majority of that is in the engine and the transmission. The single component that weighs the most is the engine and transmission, obviously. And that is stuffed almost on top of the floorboard. Well, it is on top of the floorboard. It's stuffed so far down that you can't really, I don't know. I feel like I'm just trying to say they are a lot more stable than most other off-road types of vehicles. A lot of that comes from being the Fisher-Price type thing where it's just plasticky and, you know, there's not a lot of weight up top, which is good. That means there's not a lot of weight up top for you to flip, for you to get off-center and get pulled over the top. Another thing is in this sport category, and I will say I had some incidents with this particular issue this weekend, that the narrow, the not-so-sporty vehicles, the 64-inch track width vehicles, those types of things, they are not as stable, but the sport categories, so Turbo R, Pro R, Maverick R, those things that are pushing the 70 plus inches wide, they are extremely stable due to that low center of gravity. They are extremely stable due to that extra width. They are feel a lot more stable to me too, just not necessarily that this is a, it doesn't affect the car. I guess it does, actually. That's a lie. You also sit lower in these, so your weight is actually lower. So it's probably minimal that it affects the actual, like, stability of the car, but you feel a lot better either way just because you're sitting so much closer to the floorboard. Every time I've ridden in, like, a big Jeep or a big Bronco, I'm always impressed with how well they flex, how well they move, how well they can just monster truck up things. But one thing that I've always been a little bit not impressed with is that I feel like I'm going to fall over every time because you're so much higher. So that's my spiel about the stability of these. Okay. The third thing, and this thing I think will get everybody when you first buy a UTV, you're going to get this issue. Unless you buy one of the Maverick cars or a Talon or something, the belt, you have to drive these cars kind of like a manual. And what I mean by that is you can't roll into the power like you have a torque converter. You can't roll into the power like you have a you just don't have a torque converter. You don't have that torque multiplication. You don't have that fluid coupling in a torque converter. It's a mechanical grip on a belt. So what that ends up doing is meaning that, like, once the belt is engaged, you have to kind of keep it engaged. And that is what I mean by you have to drive it by a manual. It's kind of the same thing, same principle. Once you've let out the clutch on a manual, you have to sort of either stay in that gear range within, you know, the clutch engagement, or you have to disengage the clutch. And that's kind of another story in and of itself. But it's in a clutch, it's easier to disengage and reengage the clutch. You don't have any control over that in a UTV. So when you have to drive it like a manual, what I'm saying is You have to drive it, let that belt engage, let the clutch engage, and then you have to stay in that. You can't feather the clutch out manually. You can't do stuff like that, but you have to keep that engagement. Otherwise, you won't go forward. And then if you get stuck somewhere where you're bound up, you basically are at high risk of burning a belt due to the fact that you don't have any forward movement. Your primary is spinning, 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 spinning. Your secondary isn't being pulled yet. And so it's just sitting there glazing the belt, essentially. And it makes a heck of a mess and makes you, you know, it makes you have a belt change in your future. That's really what it is. I think we talked about that, how the sheaves work. That's great. One thing I would say also along the same notes is that, you know, you can get some information from me. You can watch some YouTube videos. You really should, unless you have somebody to go with you, unless you have, oh, I'm coming up the down. Thank you, Onyx. Unless you have somebody that has a side-by-side or UTV to kind of show you the ropes, you should go take an off-road course. Watch all the videos you can. I would recommend watching videos like this one, like, you know, other people with better instructionals on how to drive. But if you can, you could find some people that can actually take you out and show you how to do it. And if you're in the Sand Hollow area, look up Sand Hollow 4x4. Those guys are awesome. They have a course that you can go take to learn how to drive off-road. I know that it's like not the most like macho thing to be like, oh yeah, I want to do a course. Oh no, I don't need a course. I'm just going to go drive and figure it out on my own. It's just like driving a car, right? Don't let your machismo get in the way of you. If you don't have somebody to show you, go book some time with someone like Sand Hollow 4x4. Get out there with someone who knows what the heck they're doing and who can show you how to do it. It'll make a world of difference to have somebody through. Just the same way, like, even currently being, you know, as capable as I am, having a spotter for certain sections, it just helps. It just helps having another set of eyes, helps having people that have an understanding of what's going on. We're coming down a little bit of a ledge here. I don't know. I've never been on this trail, so I don't want to lose it. We're good. That wasn't that bad. This trail's only rated a 5, so I didn't expect that would be a huge drop, but I'm, you know, just always be cautious. All right. Beyond the just actual driving portion of the, like, how to do it, how to drive a side-by-side, how to not tip over off-road, how to engage your, you know, I engage my this, that, or the other thing at this point. When do I lock the diffs? When do I be in four-wheel drive? When can I go out of low? That's an important factor in the side-by-side world due to that belt tip stuff. Okay, beyond all that, the other thing that you should take is like an etiquette course. An etiquette course will tell you or basically instruct you on how to drive your off-road vehicle in a very in an etiquette way, in a way that is not going to piss other people off. That's the reality. You want to get some way, you want to be able to drive, and you want to be able to have fun while also not making everybody else hate you, hate side-by-sides, hate Jeep, whatever you're in. The goal is to make sure that we can all enjoy our time out here. And an etiquette course will go a long way to that. Let's see here. This is a little bit of a tricky one. Not terrible. But let's see if we slip it all. Woo! The rocks are super wet right now. Okay, now we're back up to where I said, oh, we're at the wrong spot. We're going to head back up and keep going down. Okay, taking an etiquette course. I don't know who offers them, to truth be told, and I have always been around motorsports my whole life. I've always been around side-by-sides, snowmobiles. So trail etiquette is kind of something that I'm not trying to say like, oh, I didn't never need it. But like I mentioned, it was one of those things that I just grew up. I had to see people that came before me that knew how to do it. So I didn't have to go find a course on my own. I didn't have to go do, you know, this, that, or the other thing. I've learned some stuff from watching YouTube. I've learned some stuff from taking courses. When I was younger, I took an OHV course. Oh, actually, Utah requires an OHV course now, I just remembered. So don't complain about that. Go take it. It'll teach you a lot of simple things, you know, the hand signals for how many people are behind you. I can't tell you how many times I've been like, yo, I got three in my group. And I get some dude on the other side just happy as a lark, waving, oh, good to be out here. Let's do it. And you're like, yeah, that's fine. But like, also then you go around the corner and there's four of his buddies. And you're like, man, I wish I would, you just would have told me. Like, that's what that is. So you'll learn stuff like that. Get a course. Do your research. Get, you know, get oriented. Get familiar with doing this type of stuff before you just jump out and do it. Another part of that is, you know, this wasn't my fifth item. So that was four I just went through. I thought I had originally had five. I'm going to add a sixth. I would say start slow. Well, this kind of blends in, actually. Sorry. It's going to be fifth or sixth, however you want to feel about it. Start slow. Start doing, you know, what you feel comfortable with. Get with other people. Kind of feel it out. Push yourself a little bit. Figure it out as you go. You don't need to go, you know, again, drop the ego is kind of the biggest thing. You don't need to be the first guy up the wall. You don't need to be the first guy down the trail. You don't need any of that. Drop the ego. Get seat time. The more time you spend on the seat, the more time, or the better it'll feel, the more comfortable you'll feel, the more relaxed you'll become, the better driver you'll be able to be. There is a saying that goes, you know, seat time over everything. And that is 100% true, especially in the side-by-side world. We're coming up to the end of Resurrection, actually, so I'm going to cut this off. But before I do that, seat time, seat time, seat time. Seat time is everything. You don't need to go buy all the newest gear in the world. Yes, there are things that I would recommend purchasing. But I will say, you see these people that they buy a side-by-side, and then they just throw the biggest tires they can on it, and then they throw the, you know, whatever sound system in and all the lights and blah, 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 blah. That's all great. It's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. But what I am saying is if you're going to spend money, I would consider spending money on a course to learn how to be a better driver off-road than I would spending money on like just like a cheap set of light pods or something that's not going to like really make that much difference. Like if you drive a lot at night, sure, you need the lights. If you're going to get real serious with it, and realistically everybody should, you should probably spend the money on a cage. I'm just saying you don't need to bedazzle your side by side more than you need to get seat time and get a training, get a course, learn how to do it. That being said, there are some products I would recommend. Obviously they're the products I use. Get a cage that's safety oriented. I would also get a set of communication devices. These honestly, Cardo, I know that this is brought on with them, but like they have changed the way I off-road. Like they have made my life off-roading 1,000 times better. Beyond that, I would say maybe just some extra ways to carry stuff. I have my Milwaukee packouts. There's lots of things that have just different storage solutions for side by sides. But realistically, getting a wrap, getting like all these other things, sound systems, none of that really matters, and none of that is going to make your off-road experience that much better. I would spend the money on getting a really nice professional course or just on the fuel to get out with other people. Seat time is important. Seat time is everything. Start slow. Know your limits. Get after it. All right. Looks like my dogs are all tired out. So that's going to be the end of this episode. But, you know, don't forget to subscribe. Check us out. If I missed anything, if there's something that you were like, hey, I don't know, you should do this before you bought a side-by-side, drop a comment. Let me know. Thanks.